Health Buzz with Dr. Jim Keeney at www.jim.md.
This is Dr. Jim Keeney. You know, whenever I want to hear really dramatized medical news, I turn to Brian Williams and NBC Nightly News. And last night he said, "There's big news rocking the healthcare industry. Word today that two big-selling cholesterol drugs, Vytorin and Zetia, may not work as advertised." So let's talk about that. What is Vytorin? Well, it's a medicine for cholesterol. It contains Zetia as one of its working components. Now, Zetia is a little different than a lot of other cholesterol drugs. It actually stops the absorption of cholesterol at the small intestine. We've got a bunch of different classes of cholesterol drugs. The most commonly used, because they're most effective, are called statins. And statins are like Lipitor and Crestor, which you may have heard of during their advertising blitz cycle. At one point, it seemed like pretty much every other commercial was either for Viagra or Lipitor. So those days are over, and they moved on to Vytorin as the drug that is getting the advertising blitz. Now, interesting thing, this article that came out, next to it in the New England Journal of Medicine is an article about how Canada does not allow direct-to-consumer advertising, and Canada uses about a quarter of the Vytorin that we use here in the United States. So we literally use four times as much of this stuff as Canadians. Now, here's the way Vytorin works. It inhibits cholesterol absorption in the small intestine, and you add to that a statin drug. Statin drugs are a little complicated, is a big fancy word, mevalonate pathway. And just think of mevalonate as the freeway that you go on to get to cholesterol. And there's a little bottleneck in that freeway where every car has to pass through to get to the production of cholesterol. That pathway happens to be governed by a certain enzyme, and statins stop that enzyme from functioning. It doesn't allow, so it causes a traffic jam, and you can't produce cholesterol in your body. That pathway is just jammed up and slowed down, and you can't produce cholesterol as well as you should. Well, it turns out that these statins, every time they study it for one thing or another, like lowering inflammation or anything they look at as a marker for heart disease, it seems like they're helpful. For some reason, though, some people just don't seem to respond to the statin drugs as well as others. So Zetia was typically a drug you added to a statin. Now, the two together were incredibly costly. I mean, Zetia was, well, now it's about $100 a month. Zocor is about $150 a month. Yeah, the two together, $250 a month. They've come out with this pill where it's combined and it was actually cheaper. It was $100 a month for both combined. I don't know how they do that, considering Zocor is more expensive by itself than it is when you put it in with Zetia. It doesn't make sense to me, but that's the way it is. So it seemed like a great idea, and it dramatically dropped cholesterol. It's an amazing, unbelievable drop in cholesterol on people who otherwise were not getting any benefit. Problem is, we don't know if that really fixes problems as far as heart disease and stroke. That's what we're trying to prevent. We're trying to prevent the end damage, the kind of the end of the line damage that's caused by cholesterol. Now, typically, we would add things like niacin, which improves HDL cholesterol, and a class of drugs called fibrates. And those were more to improve your triglycerides. And then there's a thing called bile resins. And these resins actually bind up bile. And there's this kind of circulation of cholesterol that takes place. And this interrupts the flow of cholesterol from bile back into the liver. Those are all the options we used to have. Now you bring in Zetia, and this just seemed to be so much more effective that common sense says that it probably would be a great drug to add. Now this 10-year study comes out and shows, wait a second, when we look at the thickness of a plaque in an artery in your heart, there doesn't seem to be any significant change in the thickness of that plaque. And in some cases, the plaque actually grew. That's not a good thing. If we think that that plaque is a good indicator of whether you'll have a heart attack or not, the real marker we need to know is, are you going to have a heart attack? The study didn't look at that. It looked at what we call surrogate markers, because we don't want to do a study. 10 years is long enough. Do we really want to do an 80-year study before we know the right answer? Overall, I think this situation gives us a lot of information on how we should treat drugs when they hit the market. You really have to wait and see. Some people don't have the option to wait. People who have been on statins and then they added niacin or the fibrates I talked about or the bile resins, and they still aren't getting the numbers that you're looking for. They're not lowering their cholesterol enough. Those people really don't have too much choice. If there's a new medicine out, it sounds like a good idea, go on that medication. And that's the way this medicine was initially designed to be used. You weren't supposed to start Vytorin until you failed other therapies. Unfortunately, it worked so well, a lot of cardiologists and physicians jumped on the bandwagon and started prescribing Vytorin before trying the other drugs. That's exactly how you're not supposed to do it. And what this teaches us is try and use the tried and true medications first. We already know their risk profile. There's been plenty of time in aftermarket kind of surveillance to see which drugs are going to cause problems and what those problems are. You know, recently, for example, Singulair. We've heard that that increases your risk for suicide as a teenager. Well, they looked at 11,000 patients in the studies given to the FDA. Suicide has a rate of about 1 out of 150,000. So you need to look at almost 10 times that number of people to find one person committing suicide. And that's why aftermarket evaluation is so important, because you're not going to catch all these things with studies. If you waited for them to do studies on 150,000 people for one drug, it would take decades before drugs could come to market. So what should you do if you're on Zetia? I think you need to talk to your doctor, because if you've already tried everything else and Zetia is the only thing working, there's no evidence here that Zetia harms you. It just seems to call into question, is it really all that helpful? And for me, if you got no other, if your options are have a high cholesterol, which we know is harmful, or take this drug, which seems to not have too much benefit, but it lowers your cholesterol. At this stage of the game, we really don't have the solid answers out yet that we need, and I would take the drug. For those of you who have not used the established, tried and true medications for adjusting cholesterol before going on Zetia, you may want to take a step back here and maybe try Lipitor or Crestor for your high cholesterol, see if that's adequate. And if that is, maybe by adding some of those other drugs I mentioned, you don't need to be on this, and that might be better overall for you. And for people considering Zetia, again, it's the same situation, that if everything else has failed, you may want to look at this drug still, because we know it's effective in lowering cholesterol. This does seem like a very good, very powerful study, which not all studies are created equal, but this one does seem like a very good study, and it doesn't show much of a benefit. But again, we have so much data that shows high cholesterol is bad, and lowering cholesterol is good. My tendency would be, if this is your only option, I would still take this as the option for lowering cholesterol. You know, as an aside, this again brings up issues. It took them 2 years to release this data to us that they've known about for this study. So number one, should nonprofit organizations be the ones conducting these studies? Or should there be some rules about releasing the information? Because, you know, in the old days, it was universities basically that did these type of studies. And then drug companies would run with the findings and create a medication that made a lot of money. Now in the days of blockbuster drugs that make billions of dollars, the drug companies themselves are pouring money into research. From their vantage point, they believe they paid for this information and it's proprietary, so they don't need to release it. But when you know that a drug doesn't have a good effect, I think that's something the general population should be privy to, and it shouldn't be something that's just contained within the archives of some powerful drug company. So setting up some type of nonprofit to perform the studies, that maybe the drug companies pay for the studies to be done, but they don't actually own the data, that would go a long way towards making this stuff more apparent, or more transparent, and more open to the public. The other thing is, should drug companies be allowed to market directly to the public? I have never thought so. Their attitude is that you need to know. You need to know what's available, that your doctors are rushed and busy, and they might not bring up some of these drugs. But look at the drugs that they're advertising. They're mostly lifestyle drugs. Things like restless leg syndrome, which they can't call a disease because it's not actually a disease. It's just people that are jittery. Or Viagra, which, as if they really have to advertise for that. the only reason they advertise one over the other is because of the competition within the market. It's not because you don't know that these drugs exist. So in the end, as a consumer, what benefit do you get out of direct-to-consumer advertising? Basically, you get overprescribed because your doctor wants to make you happy. It's a business. The bottom line, you come to him and you ask for a prescription. Unless he sees a real significant reason why he shouldn't write it, he's probably going to give it to you in most cases, unfortunately. And again, referring to that second study that was included in this New England Journal that posted this article about Vytorin, they showed that Canadians don't use this drug nearly as much as we do. So the bottom line is talk to your doctor and figure out what you're going to do. If you're on Vytorin and you need to be on it, then that's something you have to discuss with your doctor. If there's other options for you, then absolutely, I would take those options. Be sure to tune in for our next segment together. We're going to talk about CPR and we're going to talk about those in-home defibrillators, those automatic defibrillators that you can buy at Costco. Be sure to listen for our next episode. We're going to talk about those defibrillators that you can buy, those automatic defibrillators that they sell in Costco. Are those worth having in your home? We see them all the time in airports. The other thing we're going to talk about is CPR, the new recommendations that is just hands only. No more gross mouth to mouth. Until next time, take care.